on this episode of Rebel Spirit Radio.
So I, aside from being a neuroscientist, I also read tarot and have been to many tarot readers. And the question for me has always been that when you do a tarot reading or any kind of divination, like be it astrology or other kinds of divination mechanisms, people are talking about emotions. People are talking about behaviors, choices that they can make, what choices other people are making, what are they thinking, and how are they going to respond to situations. And to me, each of those key words that you take from those are all essentially functions of the brain, things that you do on an everyday basis to function. So when I started thinking of it that way, I was like, wow, you know, there must be a way for us to think about tarot, the tarot world, and the imagery that it elicits in terms of brain function and behavior. And that's kind of how I forged the path in that.
Welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio, exploring the frontiers of spirituality, consciousness, the esoteric, and humanity's sacred relationship with a living earth. I'm your host, Nick Mather, and in this episode, I am joined by neuroscientist Dr. Siddharth Ramakrishnan to discuss his book, The Neuroscience of Tarot. Siddharth brings a unique perspective to the mystical world of tarot by grounding it in scientific principles, elaborating on how concepts like intuition, perception, and body signals are deeply connected to neuroscience, and how reflective exercises can enhance intuitive abilities. Also, please be sure to like and subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. Your support is truly appreciated. Siddharth Ramakrishnan, PhD, is a neuroscientist, artist, and educator. He is the chair of neuroscience at the University of Puget Sound and a recipient of the prestigious National Science Foundation Career Award. He has published in numerous scientific publications, including Nature, Neurotoxicology, AI and Society, and Experimental Biology. He has a special interest in the intersection of art, science, and technology, and runs a blog offering neuroscience insights for tarot readers. He joins me today to discuss his book, The Neuroscience of Tarot. Siddharth, welcome to Rebel Spirit Radio.
Welcome, and thank you for the invite.
Yeah, absolutely. I found your book quite interesting. There's really no other tarot book like it. And it's fascinating because it's grounded in science. And I think most people, when they think of tarot, they think of the mystical and the esoteric and whatnot. Neuroscience is not someplace that they would naturally go. So I was curious if maybe to start, we could discuss this connection. You know, what is the connection between neuroscience and tarot?
So I, aside from being a neuroscientist, I also read tarot and have been to many tarot readers. And the question for me has always been that when you do a tarot reading or any kind of divination, like be it astrology or other kinds of divination mechanisms, people are talking about emotions, people are talking about behaviors, choices that they can make, what choices other people are making, what are they thinking, and how are they going to respond to situations. And to me, each of those key words that you take from those are all essentially functions of the brain, things that you do on an everyday basis to function. So when I started thinking of it that way, I was like, wow, you know, there must be a way for us to think about tarot, the tarot world, and the imagery that it elicits in terms of brain function and behavior. And that's kind of how I forged the path in that.
Okay. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. But again, it's something that I think most of us don't think about. So for example, intuition. Mm-hmm. I think that intuition is something that one, you know, I had a colleague once where I mentioned intuition. She's like, I don't even know what that is. and I think sometimes people think it's like something, I don't know where they think it comes from. So where does that intuition come from? And how does neuroscience help us? Because one of the key things that I loved about your book is you have all these exercises that help, but how can this understanding from a neuroscientist scientific perspective help us develop
intuition?
Yeah, intuition is something you can kind of think of it as when you're making decisions where your brain does not have all the information. So it's not like a logical step by step. If A led to B led to C, so I have to do D. So it's not like that kind of a logical step by step. You don't have all the information in front of you. Instead, you're taking in a lot and you're not consciously aware of everything that you're taking in, and you have to make that split second decision. And in a way, evolutionarily, that's probably why we have this intuitive processing ability, because if some animal is attacking you and you have to logically think about what to do next, you're going to be dead, right?
Right.
So the intuitive ability is there for you to make those really quick, not there is the co concept of instinct, but this is more making those judgment calls. Should I make a left turn or a right turn? Those kind of judgment calls. And scientists have been studying this in mainly in athletes and in doctors. So when you're a surgeon and you are going to make a cut, and then in the middle of surgery, you find something completely different than what we expected. And there is no roadmap for that at that point. You have to make those intuitive judgment calls as to how to move forward. And so the scientists have been studying doctors and athletes as to how these kinds of intuitive judgment calls are being formed and what part of the brain they're using in order to do that. And as you mentioned, like you can the simplest rule of thumb is, in order to become better at your intuitive abilities, is to become an expert at what you're doing. So do a lot of study. Initially, it looks like we are following the roadmap of in these situations you need to do this, in these situations you need to do that. And that's true for novice doctor or even a novice tarot reader. A novice tarot reader is probably holding that little booklet in their
Right,
hands
right.
and doing those interpretations with that. But then over time, the book is kind of set to the side, and you're kind of using more other kind of patterns and cues in order to become make your interpretations. And what's also being found is that you're using different parts of the brain area in order to make those intuitive leaps. And there's a big master integrator in the cingulate cortex that you're actually using in order to kind of dive into that in that putting all that conscious and unconscious information together in order to make those big leaps. And that's where it is. So if one word of advice would be to, I guess, do becoming an expert. And also, once you make those intuitive decisions, maybe write them down or keep a note of it so that you can go back, because not all intuitive decisions are correct.
Right.
So you might feel all good about it, you got the resolution, but then the actual outcome of the situation might not be what you expected. How you interpret it might not turn out to be. So kind of going back and reflecting on it, and then saying, oh, you know what? I made this judgment call using this kind of information, but then it didn't work out. So why did I make those quit? So having that insight bit coming in later and reflecting on it is going to become make you a better intuitive person.
Okay, yeah, and I really appreciate that because I've been reading tarot for about 40 years, and just like everyone else, I started with that little white book, and I think people get frustrated with that, and there's this sense of I've heard others say, you don't even need that, just use your intuition. But if I understand what you're saying is, well, no, what's going to be helpful is having that background knowledge, and that's what provides a more, what's the word I want, reliable, intuitive kind of guess.
Yeah, I think having that foundation and even maybe learning some of the language, some of the symbolism that's behind some of the cards. And as you become more and more of an expert, you might add astrological symbols into it. You might add Taoistic symbols or even like elemental information into it. So as you gain more knowledge, you're adding more and more to that foundation of what that image means. And I think all that is really important. So intuition is fed by that knowledge. It's
Right.
not just something that it's not a psychic ability, which is a completely different thing. It's more about how you're training your brain to make use of all this information together.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. And it reminds me, I had T. Susie Chang on as a guest a while back. Actually, it's been a year ago now. And one of the practices that she does and encourages is to do a daily draw, just like one card or even two cards a day. And she keeps a very substantial record of how that might play out in the daily life. And it seems that what you're saying, works perfectly with that.
I actually did that for a while. I got the inspiration from the Voyager deck, where they talked about doing a daily draw and doing setting an intention for the day and leading your life with that particular intent, but then not really, and then coming back at the end of the day and looking back and seeing if that worked out. And that, again, that reflection piece, like feeding back into, and as you mentioned, the Susie Chang, like working on that, having a record of it and coming back and seeing what it meant, it's really going to add to your practice in some ways.
Yeah, it can help inform how you read the cards, you know.
Yeah, and what I've been noticing is our observation skills are very different based on your cultural upbringing. And so they say that Japanese folks or people from East Asia tend to notice background information way more, whereas people from in Western practices tend to notice foreground information way more. So if you look at an aquarium, some people might notice the bubbles, whereas other people might notice the fish, right? But so that means that you're looking, both of you might be looking at the same tarot card or image, and you might be observing completely different things. So one way maybe to also kind of jumpstart your intuitive process is to forcibly notice different things about the same image and seeing if that leads you on a different interpretive journey.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the exercises you had in the book. And you also noted one that I believe Mary Kay Greer did at a workshop that you were at or a conference, where she had everyone kind of go around and just simply describe the cards, and that people saw different things, and it gave a very different perspective.
Yeah, this was at the Omega workshop we Mary and I did in 2023 summer, and it was at the Masters of Tarot conference, and it was a fascinating experience for me because again, it was the same exact card, and all she said is, "Everyone, just describe the card. Just tell us what you see in it." And it even within that group of like about 80 people, it was just so different. And in fact, she says it's an interesting tool for you if you're doing a reading for a person to not put your own biases on the querent, and instead ask them almost as to what they're expecting from the reading or what they're expecting from the cards. And so in a certain way, that really gives them the agency of what information you're giving them.
Yeah, and I think that leads to something that you noted, which is, I think, absolutely true, is that when we read the cards for other people, it's always transactional.
Yeah, this has been fascinating. So I'm an animal scientist. Even though I'm a neuroscientist, I'm an animal scientist, but been, you know, as a human, you've been constantly fascinated about how you interact with other people, right? And even in this conversation that you and I are having, we are making note of like all kinds of like nonverbal cues and like noddings and tone of voice and levels. How do I judge like your level of excitement? What am I mean, and it now looks like when we look at when we're doing a reading or when you're talking to someone else, you first almost need to mirror their experiences onto yourself. And then you create a mental image of that in your head. It's called like mentalizing in your head. And then you're actually adding aspirations and desires and thing on top of that. So what is their motivation? What are they going to do next? So those kinds of things you're adding on top of it. And then you're then making that your own like response to what they're saying. So I guess when you go in and sitting for a tarot reading, all that is happening almost within the first few beats. And your the reader is actually literally creating like a mental picture and adding all these attributes as to how this thing is going to unfold.
Okay, well, I have two questions in regards to that. The first one is this this mentalizing, is it a conscious process or an unconscious process or a little bit of both?
It's pretty much unconscious because the amount of information you're taking in is a large amount. So it's not like I'm saying, okay, I'm going to look at your left eye and then your right eye. I'm not like having that decision making involved in it. It's all happening almost simultaneously and in a very very quick second. In fact, in the order of milliseconds is where like all this information is being taken in, and so it's pretty much all unconscious in terms of that. I think the conscious aspect of it comes when you verbalize it or add labels to it, which is part of the process. Almost like the last bit of the process is where you're kind of saying, you know, this person looks sad, or this person looks happy. And you're adding those words to it is when you're labeling it, is when you then your conscious brain almost takes over at that point. You're like, oh, you know, okay, what can I do about this now? So.
Okay, I think I may have more than just the two questions on this. Because as you were speaking, the other question that came to mind was, how accurate is this? How good are we at mentalizing the querents?
That's a very good question. Again, this I think in some ways you do need to become more of an expert at it on some level. Some people are probably better at it than others. There is an exercise about emotional contagion in it. It almost seems like some of us are more better at gauging emotions in others. And also there are different kinds of emotional variables. So some people are better at understanding sadness, and some people are better at understanding happiness. So there are actually even different like variables within that. And so I would probably say it's something you probably need to get better trained at. And in some ways that's where some of the neurodivergence comes in, right? Like in fact, being empathetic or trying to understand other people's cues is something we learn as kids. And then over time you keep adding layers and layers and layers to it. So it's a learned thing that needs to be taught, because I have a 4-year-old and you know I need to tell her, you know, do you understand this person is sad right now? Or and those are some of the things that we actually need to learn over time.
Yeah, you discuss in the book, and this is still not the other question I had for you. You discuss in the book things like the mirror neurons, I think, which is helps us, I think, be more empathetic towards others, that we can actually sort of step into their experiences to some level.
Yeah, it almost looks like there is what is called affective empathy and cognitive empathy. So the difference being that if I see someone sad, almost immediately my face might react, even before cognitively I understand sadness, like what's going on with that person. So there's almost like a physical, visceral reaction when you see get someone get hurt. Your face might immediately go into like, or like a shock or something, and then comes the point of understanding what's going on. So it maybe as social creatures, humans have developed this way of responding to situations and people, and so and but they're kind of delinked the cognitive bits where you're understanding and putting a label on it and trying to then visualize like what might have led to it, so that the thinking bits are different than the physical reaction bits almost.
Okay. Well, the other question, this is the initial original second question that I had for you, is one of the criticisms, I guess, about psychics, and we're not making the claim that tarot readers are psychic here, although some want to make that claim. But one of the criticisms often is that what's happening is not necessarily any kind of psychic activity, but rather what they refer to as cold reading. And it seems to me that in a way, what you're saying is, well, yeah, it's cold reading and it's helpful and this is how we're doing it. Why would we dismiss that or say that that is somehow disingenuous?
That's a good question. I think cold readings are there, and but I don't know if it can explain everything. Right. And I think the problem right now scientists face is that we might not have the tools or the sensory perception to see psychic abilities, maybe.
Right.
Some of it comes from my training in India about how when you think about the different planes of existence, they say that there's a physical plane, a mental plane, and then there are a couple of planes above that, and one of them is the plane of Vijnanamayam, which is like the amazement, or the plane of amazement almost, of finding like truths and finding secrets and things like that. And I'm just wondering if you think of that as like mind waves or electromagnetic waves that are being. So if you think of it, your brain is an electrical entity, right? Because it's got electricity, current flowing through it, which essentially means it's also a magnetic entity. So which is why we can go into an MRI machine or and get your magnetic waves like imaged. And so which means that it's not here, it's not just contained here, but it's kind of beyond a little bit, a little bit beyond that, right? So then you think about auras and people picking up on waves. So is there like an ability that we just cannot measure at this point? Is something I wondered about. The problem is there is no one testing it, or there's not that much evidence for it, so I'm not able to comment on it that well. So I wouldn't dip. As a person coming from observing a lot of these things, probably I wouldn't dismiss it, which is probably not going to get me a lot of points in the scientific community, but I'm at the point in my life where I can just say that I don't think we can o overtly dismiss some of these things. Because meditation also, like people were like, oh, that's just like, woo-woo before. But now there's more and more evidence that like, where, I mean, how it helps with the brain and quietening certain areas. And I think as technology and imaging processes improve, we're going to get better at trying to ask some of these questions.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yeah, it was just something that came to mind as I was reading this because I thought that, because the cold read, the claim that people are just doing cold reading, they're essentially saying what you're kind of laying out, that you're picking up on the emotions, that you're looking at body, bodily responses and things like that. And it seemed to me as, it's like, well, why reject that? That is an important source of knowledge in a way. So, yeah, so that was where that question came from. But, and this isn't in the book, but I'm curious, since you mentioned, like the imaging, and I know that in the book you've got all these amazing pictures of the brain and which parts are activated and whatnot. Are you aware of any kind of imaging done on tarot readers, like when they're reading or anything like that?
I don't think so.
It might be difficult to do, but
I think it's becoming better with there are now these new infrared devices, which are kind of helmets that you can wear, and I have a friend who does this thing called octopus brainstorming, where they these ha octopus hats, and then two people like hook up with each other, and then when they sync up their waves, the lights and the hats like ma match up. The problem, I think, is the cheap tools out there are just one. You're just getting one electrode point, whereas the actual sophisticated tools from which you can get a lot of data need more connection points to your head. And I think unless there is someone out there who is really excited about it, I don't think they're going to be doing that study. I think, but then again, there, I think as technology becomes more cheaper, which is happening, I think there will be room for doing some of these studies.
Yeah. Well, I know that there are some people doing studies on psychic abilities and phenomena. So, but as far as I know, they're not doing anything with tarot. But I was just kind of curious what would happen if we, looked at the brain of a tarot reader when they were doing a reading. What might we see?
I some of that is laid out in the book in the for me the first step in the tarot is you look at an image, right? And when you look at an image, what's going on? You're literally like l seeing it, and so there's a concept of perception where you're taking in that image, and then it's just still a picture, like you're taking a camera picture, and then at some point you need to recognize the different objects in it, and then from there you have to add meanings and words to those objects, like what is this over here, basic meaning, like am I seeing a sun? Am I seeing a person? And then you're adding metaphors and associations and kind of tying that all up. So I can kind of imagine how it can go from your visual centers down into your object recognition centers, and then from there to your memory centers, in order to kind of find out, okay, where have I seen this before? Like, what does this mean? And adding all of that, and then you're then adding layers of emotions on top of it. So then it's probably going into your amygdala and your emotion centers, and then finally it's then integrated into your intuitive processing areas. So that's probably the timeline of it. The problem is I'm taught, even when I'm saying this, it's in the matter of seconds, whereas in practice it's probably going to be lesser than that.
Right. And there's also a bodily aspect that's going on, and I want to talk about that to some extent. We want to make sure that I've got this correct. Is that the interoception? Okay. Yeah. So if you could maybe explain what that is and how it relates to tarot.
For a long time, I think scientists were all about the brain and kind of disconnected it from the body. Whereas I think people in esoteric practices were not that way. They're more about the whole holistic, experience. But more and more, it seems like the brain is responding to changes in the body and then interpreting it as a particular emotion. So when you look at the death card in a particular context, you might, your heart might just completely constrict and you're like, oh my God, I got this card, right? And so when you feel that constriction in your chest, that sensation or that sensory information is then passed to your brain to say, oh, my heart is being constricted, I'm feeling this drop in my stomach, so that probably means I feel upset or something. So, but then, so there are literally all these sensors all through your body that are then feeding information into your head, which we then interpret as emotions. So the actual labeling it of it as shock or anger or happiness is coming later, but the physical experience of it is happening a step before that. Which is why it's great when you go for a tarot. If you're a tarot practitioner, it might be good for you to start your reading from an emotionally grounded place instead of being agitated or in your own like world of in a different emotional state as opposed to being grounded and neutral. So you're not transferring your own emotional inner states onto the reading itself.
Right. Yeah, it seems to me, I don't know how many people, when they read tarot, check in with their bodies. And something that this is just a personal kind of description here. I think a lot of times when we think about intuitions, we kind of ignore the body. I mean, there may be that sense of, oh, it makes my tummy a little upset or something. But very recently, I was offered a couple of classes at a college, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I want to do this. But I was really concerned about the time because I want to devote time to my podcast and growing that. And there was a part of me that's, kind of, benefit, deficit, just thinking it through. But then I stopped and I'm like, how does my body react to this? And I noticed that when I thought about just having one class, I was okay. But when I thought about taking on two sections, my body was very clearly saying, oh no, that's the way anxiety lies. And it was a learning lesson for me to really start paying attention to the bodily sensations. So all that said, how would a tarot reader listen to their body when they are doing a reading for someone else?
Yeah, I think what you mentioned was really great. I think having that quick body scan is something that you really need to do. Maybe being even aware of where you feel different emotions in your body. So almost this making me sad, like what does that really mean? Does that mean that I'm feeling? So there are some scientific evidence talks about some parts of your body being activated, almost feeling heated, and other parts of your body cooling down. So almost having a color chart, which is there in the book, I think, where you draw, you kind of color code, like, okay, when I'm feeling sad, these are the parts of the body I
Right.
feel activated in, and these I feel like more. Some people feel depression as almost heavy coldness in their legs. So having that body scan, I think, before you do a reading is important. And at the same time, I think it might also be important for the querent to, when they're coming in with a question, for them, you asking them also maybe to do a body check. Because even when you enter, when you tell them all this stuff that's laying out in front of you, they might not be ready to receive that information because they might be in a different mental state themselves. So that's something maybe to keep aware of.
Okay. Well, that's before a reading. What about during the reading?
The problem I feel is if I think this is why I think some of these exercises maybe should be done either as a practice, as opposed to during an actual, reading with somebody, because if you start kind of disconnecting in the middle of the reading, maybe that might be not a good problem, not a
Right.
good practice for you. But if you become aware of your body sensations even before, then when you're going through the reading, you might become more attuned to what's going on in a much more quicker fashion than being that way, because just become more bodily aware. They have shown that power of interoception can be trained. So if I ask you right now, how fast is your heart beating, you might not be able to tell me. But people who are constantly checking in with their heartbeats are actually able to tell how fast their heart is beating. So almost like having that interoceptive awareness, almost like those breathing techniques, right? When you say breathe in through your one nostril and breathe out through the
Yeah.
other, having that interoceptive awareness of where your different body parts are and what they are feeling at this moment might make you a little bit more fine-tuned to changes that happen during readings, I think.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. And I find it really interesting. I'm going to ask this question just because you're a neuroscientist and I've got you here. But one is what neuroscience is, because I think a lot of people think it's just about studying the brain. But you noted in the book that it's a bridge between biology and psychology. And as we've been speaking here the past, few minutes, one of the things I was curious about, and this is the question I have for you as a neuroscientist, is, we always think in terms of the scanning of the brain, but are they doing like full body scans at the same time where they can check the brain and the body? Is that something that's done or possible right now?
You can do MRIs on the whole body. Neuroscience is understanding like the principles of almost the basic units of the neuron of the brain, which is the neuron. And as you know, it's not just here, it's kind of all over.
Right.
And so if your mind is acting in a certain way, or your brain is acting in a certain way, what is the
Right.
underlying principles behind why it's acting a
Right.
certain way? In a way, it's a very reductionist science where
Right.
you really need to kind of tease things apart and go to the building blocks and look at like, okay, why is this neuron doing this? And then what is this circuit doing? But you can also build it up from there to become this more about what the activation of this whole region is going to be. I think it's come to a point now where it's influencing psychology a lot because we are able to image billions of neurons at the same time simultaneously, and with the power of computers now we're able to understand how the process of activation works. So that way I think it's going to grow bigger and bigger in terms of because when I started what 25 years ago, we could record from one to maybe four cells simultaneously, but now you're kind of imaging like huge circuits all with millions of neurons simultaneously. So, and that power of multi, like the whole holistic system of the brain is going to be really, really useful. I still feel it's very brain centric, the field. I think now with Parkinson's research, there's become more of a body looking at the body, because there's a vagal nerve theory of Parkinson's where information from the vagal nerve, they sometimes cut the vagal nerve for some Parkinson's patients to help with some of their symptoms. So there seems to be this body brain connection that's coming up, but usually it's almost like this little bit, and how are we going to treat that little bit kind of thing that's going on.
I was just curious in the sense of, I guess, what was behind the question was, for example, looking at the brain with someone who has depression. You know, there may be a certain part of the brain that is a little bit more active or less active. You know, we have that correlation, but you had also mentioned that sometimes people will feel cold in their legs. And so I was like, okay, so has that been scanned, where the brain and the body, it's at the same time?
No, you're right. I mean, it's not, and that's problem. I think the Western angle of things, the training is very isolating the bit that's problematic, and then just concentrating on it and not looking at the holistic treatment involved. And then when they talk about things like depression or PTSD, it's about the fact that you normally, if I say, oh, you're feeling depressed, why don't you think of something good, right? And then you're kind of breaking that cycle of negative brain imagery to make it more positive. And those folks might not be able to make that positive imagery. What there is a theory that I told you, like you kind of do a check of my heart is beating this way, my lung is this way, and then that your brain is then interpreting. So if there's a disconnect between what your body is saying and how your brain labels it, that could lead to depression or other kinds of mental issues. Because you're behaving a certain way, but your brain is saying, I'm still feeling sad. So there's this disconnect. So that might be a big issue.
All right. Well, thank you. I know this is a little bit off topic, but it was something that kind of came to mind, you know, with what you've got in the book, because you do have exercises where people pay attention to the parts of the body and whatnot. And it's just something that came to mind. I'm like, well, aha, I've got him here. I'm going to ask. Let's go back to the tarot a bit as well. You make a point towards the end of the book. That precognition is different than prediction. So, which one is happening in tarot?
It's interesting. So the few tarot conferences I've been to, there's been a movement away almost from the predictive use of tarot to more of a reflective or a almost like a diagnostic use of it in terms of what is the current situation at hand, instead of saying, this is going to happen to you like 10 years down the line, I guess. But I do think the predictive bit, if I were to differentiate between intuition and psychic abilities, I'd probably put the prediction in the intuitive bracket and psychic in the precognitive bits of it. It's kind of fascinating that it looks like there's a field of neuroforecasting that's emerging, that's coming up now, where if I just asked you right now what is going to be the most popular song 6 months down the line, you might verbally say it's going to be song A, but your brain might actually be saying, actually it's song. Your unconscious brain is actually pointing to something else, and that is what's going to be, the correct answer. So they have This kind of work is not done on an individual basis, more on a crowd basis. Like they are trying getting a group of people, and they're saying, this group of people actually know that that particular song is going to be super popular. So they're actually able to forecast or predict what's going to happen down the line. Our brain is very predictive. We constantly use it in order to understand what's going to happen next, and we need to do that in order to survive, like basic stuff. If a car is coming past, you need to kind of know where it's going to go and predict, where you need to go and all. So we constantly use it. So the question is whether you can use those same tools that you have to predict things from based on tarot information or other kinds of esoteric practices, right? And so the question is, if the tools are there, why not? And so that's kind of where I was leading with that bits of it.
Yeah, there's something that seems that science can't necessarily respond to when it comes to tarot. You know, we can look at the brain and understand intuition, and you do an excellent job of saying, okay, well, here's how brain's involved with intuition, and here are some things you can do to improve your intuition. But the thing that seems to not be able to be addressed is the actual randomness of the cards themselves.
Yeah, that's a really good point, right? And sometimes you do a spread and you get the same thing, or like something just drops from your when you're shuffling the deck and like a card just drops. Yeah, I have actually no answer to that. Yeah, the why the cards come out a certain way, and when you talk to Mary Greer, and there's a big thing about do the cards really matter? Like, you know, or when you go to a reading, have you already made up your mind? Like when a querent is asking a question, even before. This is something I think there's one of the exercises in the book is at what point in your reading do you have you made your decision? Like, you know, this is what the interpretation is going to be. Are the cards in front of you, or even before then you're like, oh, this is what the outcome is going to be. So that is something maybe to check yourself to see if you're where your interpretation is coming from. Is it coming without the cards, or are you really looking at the images and then coming up with your interpretation? But yeah, how the cards fall out is something I don't know. I probably have to do some probabilistic theory research into something like that. That's a really good question.
And I don't even know that that would help, because it's not just the randomness, but it's that the random cards have a kind of meaning, that they speak to the question, that you know. And I've had where I've done pulled some cards, I'm like, this doesn't seem relevant at all. But then I also have times I'm like, yeah, that's dead on right. And there's also the idea that sometimes the cards are going to tell you what you don't want to know. You know, because you may be like, oh, is this the person I'm going to spend the rest of my life with? And you get the Tower card or something. It's like, no, it's not. So I find that part actually kind of interesting. And my approach is that I usually say that I rely on Jung's idea of synchronicity, that it's a meaningful coincidence. And if it has meaning for you, it has meaning for you. And if it doesn't, it's, you know, you just, you know, it's a little bit of fun. Maybe it gives you something to think about. But I don't know that we can measure synchronicity.
And now you got me thinking like crazy.
Good. That's my job, is to get people thinking. I want to ask also, I've not seen this, but you have your own deck. I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit, because you incorporate the neuroscience into the major arcana, right?
Yeah, that's kind of how it all started. I wanted to understand the correspondences. As I mentioned, the fact that you have all these themes going in the tarot, what does that mean in terms of the brain? And so I thought of the fool, about the beginnings and kind of walking off the cliff and anything could happen. And then for me, that really represented almost the genesis of neurons, where there's so much potential. There's a stem cell that can become any kind of neuron, and it can wander off into any particular location and you know take on different things. It's a very exciting time. So, and kind of that's where it started, and then it moves through the different parts of the different cards of the major arcana. Like the Empress is about fertility, and there's this you have this hormone generator, the pituitary, which is just this all the hormones about sex and fertility and puberty and love and everything is just coming from there, and it's just ripe with potential there as well. And so they started finding those correspondences, and I asked a few people to draw it for me, and no one would, so I did it myself and produced it. It was a really great experience, and it kind of helped me really dive a little bit deeper into some of the research, and both in the neuroscience as well as in the tarot. and it's called a Neuro Tarot deck, and
Okay.
it's a really fun deck. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what it was called. And because in this book, The Neuroscience of Tarot, you do go through the major arcana and kind of make those connections. And the deck, then, I would imagine, is just the visual representation of that. Do you include, how do you represent some of these neuroscientific ideas, though, within the visual representation of the card?
Yeah, so I don't know, I probably should have had the deck right in front of me,
That's
but I don't.
okay. I was just curious, so
Yeah,
yeah.
I kind of do. For example, the devil is my favorite. I talk about how the hedonistic pleasures and unrivaled, like if you have no inhibitions at all, like you can kind of go berserk. And the basal ganglia is kind of this location where if things go wrong with the basal ganglia, you'll probably become this inveterate gambler, or you might watch like pornography without any, like, all kinds of pornography, or like act upon your impulses without any kind of control. So, but it's the it's located near these gaps in your brain called the ventricles, and they kind of shape like horns. So it kind of
Okay.
comes out like little horns with this, and the striatum has these stripes that come out, which kind of look like these webs that can then control a puppet almost. So
Okay.
I kind of
Interesting. Yeah.
incorporate brain anatomy into some
All
of
right.
the imagery behind it.
Yeah. That's what I was curious about, was how you did that. And what was the name of the deck again?
The Neuro Tarot deck.
Okay, Neuro Tarot deck. I will have to look into that to add to my tarot collection. Speaking of tarot, do you have a favorite deck?
I go back to the Rider-Waite deck a lot. I also have this old Italian deck with a lot of very gruel imageries, like babies being boiled and stuff in the
Oh,
back.
the was that the Sola? I forget the name of it.
I don't know the name of it, but yeah, it's pretty gruesome.
Sola Busca, I think, is the name of it.
This is
If
one
I'm
of the you can't see it, it's all like blurred, but it's kind of
Yeah.
it's a very even the sun card is like a cold winter sun.
All
It's
right.
not in, but then it's a very powerful deck I found for myself. My sister gave it to me, and even though I'm not as fascinated, like happy about the images, I still find that it's very powerful in answering questions for me.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious now if it's the same one. If it is, I think there's an argument that a lot of the imagery speaks to one of the ancient mystery traditions. I know someone wrote a book on it. And so, like the boiling babies has some kind of meaning. It's not just, yum. And this is kind of a question that probably should have been asked towards the beginning, but I really wanted to get into the science here. But how did you get interested in tarot?
So I grew up in India, but we didn't do any tarot. We did mostly astrology. Even though my dad is a doctor, we like I mentioned it in other places. Like surgeries, a lot of times in India don't happen during certain hours of the day because it's a kind of a
Right.
death hour. So, and pretty much every event in the family is done with a horoscope. Like you'd
Right.
find the right time to do things. So it was never like those kinds of practices was never like alien or like shoehorned in. It was more like a very organic part of life. So pretty open to those things. And then I came to the US and my sister sent me a deck of tarot cards, and then we've been doing readings on the phone ever since. So
Okay.
yeah, that's how I got into it. Yeah.
Yeah. What was it? Do you know what was it that sort of lit the love for the tarot when you received that deck? Like, oh, this is really cool. Or did you do, you said that you and your sister did readings over the phone. Did you find that there was a relevance in the readings and that maybe kind of led you towards a greater interest in it?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the age, and I was 20 in my tw it was 2021, and all these things are happening around you, and you really want to know like what's going to happen, or like what's going on. And I think a part of it was that curiosity a little bit, having come to a new country, this all these possibilities and so and unknowns almost. And in fact, it's interesting because there's been now been scientific proof that the more uncertainties you have in your life, the more your belief in esoteric practices go up as well. So it's kind of interesting. Maybe that is one of the things, like the uncertainties in my life kind of maybe gave me that little amp into using this as a practice, maybe.
Yeah, I've read that culturally, whenever things are very uncertain, that's when these esoteric practices seem to rise. So yeah, there are a lot of astrologers on YouTube. So what does that tell us right now about our
There has been
certainty
an
and
openness. I do have to, I take my Neuro Tarot deck to the Society for Neuroscience conference every year, and the young scientists are super open to it. It just seems to be this, I don't know, something is going on.
Yeah, very interesting. I many, many years ago, I worked in the engineering department at a university, and one of our professors was the chair of a international X-ray conference. And so in the summer, I had the privilege of going and working at the conference, and it would be in various places. They went to Hawaii the year before I started working there, and they never went back. So there's that. But I would take my tarot deck with me, and I would sit at like the hotel lounge in the evenings, just slowly sipping a beer or something with my cards, and inevitably, I would end up doing several readings for people
That's
at the conference.
great.
It was a lot of fun, and I always liked that aspect of it, that they did seem to be open to these things, or maybe they were just curious. I don't know. I don't know. Is there anything we've kind of gone around through a lot of things, and I think that I think we've talked about most of the things that I actually had listed out here. Is there anything that we haven't discussed that you think is important in terms of neuroscience in the tarot?
No, I think you covered pretty much all the topics. I do think that folks, you do need to realize you don't need to be an expert in neuroscience to understand this. It's some, I feel like that's one of my main goals in life is to kind of break down that barrier. But and we all have amazing minds, and I'm just the tarot is a great tool to understand that. And I'm hoping that we'll kind of shift the focus and say, can you use neuroscience to understand what's going on when using tarot, I guess. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I found it a fascinating book, and I think really helpful, especially if someone wants to kind of defend their use of tarot. They can say, well, look, there are, these scientific things that, and not necessarily, and that would be from the predictive, not the precognitive, perspective, I think. But I think that's important, and I think it gives people a different way of thinking. And, most tarot books do have exercises within them, but I think the ones that you provided are exceptionally useful,
Thank you.
because I've never seen anyone or in any of the texts have a thing like, what we talked about, checking with your body when you're doing this. How does it feel? And I think that's incredibly valuable.
Thank you.
Of course. So my final two questions are the two questions I always ask. What do you have coming up next? What are you working on?
Well, the book is coming out November 8th. You can pre-order it now on Llewellyn or Amazon or Barnes and Noble, The Neuroscience of Tarot. Or you can check out my website, www.brainmystic.com. The tarot decks are always available. I'm having a new batch printed out and they're
All
coming
right.
out. And aside from that, giving talks, I'm going to be a featured speaker at Northwest Tarot Symposium in a couple of weeks. I'm on a StarCon in Florida, January 2025. I will also be at the Society for Neuroscience with my Neuro Tarot decks in October.
I'm curious, how do people respond to your presentations at like the tarot conferences?
It's been great. Tarot, the crowd has been fantastic. Very, very curious. In fact, I met the publisher, the publishing editor at one of the conferences, and very curious. They really want to know more. I get a lot of, it's been fascinating. A lot of psychologists use this in their practice. Folks who work with autistic kids, So there's been a very interesting questions from all kinds of different angles. Everyone wants to learn more. So it's been a, and again, as I mentioned, it seems like they want to move away from being a who's my next boyfriend to a question
Right.
of what do these cards mean
Right.
and what does that mean for me and things like that. So moving away from a predictive model to a self-reflection model.
Yeah. 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 And I appreciated that as well in the book, where I think you noted that when you're reading for someone, don't ask them, was this right or anything, but, ask them about their feelings or how they see the cards or something. And that, I think, makes the readings much richer. Yeah. Well, Siddharth, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciated the conversation, and I'm going to have to get is that the Neuro Tarot deck? Is that also available on Amazon? And
The tarot deck is available on my website,
okay.
brainmystic.com, or on
Okay.
Etsy.
Okay. All right. All right. Yeah, I use Etsy sometimes, so I'll have to check that out. Well, again, thank you so much. I really appreciated it. And I encourage everyone to get a copy of the book. I will put a link for the book and also your website into the show notes in the video description.
Thank you so much. It was such a great pleasure talking to you.
All right. Yeah, I enjoyed it as well.
And that's a wrap on episode 162 of Rebel Spirit Radio. Thank you so much for listening or watching if you're part of my YouTube audience. Now you know what's coming up next, all the usual. Sign up for my Patreon, share this with friends and family, and on social media too, please, and subscribe or follow the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen to or view podcasts. You know the drill. But here's the thing, all of that is really important. Sharing, subscribing, or following are all free, and they really do help. Right now, putting together this podcast is a labor of love, and I do love it. I'm in the process of making changes to improve the podcast and the YouTube channel. It's slow going, but your support will help me speed up the process and ensure that I can continue with the podcast and offer much more content than what I provide now. As I always like to say, I'm here in the Front Range now doing missionary work in regards to religion, spirituality, and ecology. Consciousness and psychedelics, the esoteric, and how all of this can help us heal humanity's relationship with the sacred earth. So if you feel moved by the rebel spirit, and I sure hope that you do, then please, by all means, help me in my efforts to share the good news. I'm Nick Mather, and you've been listening to or watching Rebel Spirit Radio. Until next time, may you be at peace, may you flourish in all possible ways. And may you continue to nurture your rebel spirit.